You gotta fix your buddy back there.
No, he's just done. He's done.
He's done?
He's been looking for his keys for fucking 25 years.
Oh, God. He's passed out. Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for June 22nd, Tuesday, the first one of the summer, 2021.
It is. It is summer,
alongside
isn't it?
Ian Ferguson and passed out Mario, who couldn't find his keys.
Keys, please. My keys.
And
just
Luigi,
want my keys.
Luigi can't see him. May have clogged the toilet. I'm Pat Contry. On the show today, we'll be talking about lots of fun stuff in our world. We'll be reviewing the Evercade handheld. They were nice enough to send us a couple of review units. We'll be talking about a handheld Virtual Boy, Super Mario World, and widescreen. Lots of other stuff. We got a traditional Q&A about what post-childhood games or systems were you most excited for, and voicemails and Patreon
pull-up. Handheld revival. That's what this is.
That's what it is. We're in the silver age of handhelds right now.
Indeed.
The silver age. Golden age would have been the late 80s, early 90s, right?
Yeah.
How was your weekend, Ian? Did you see Streets of Fire yet on Netflix? People were talking about it on Twitter. I searched Streets of Fire.
No.
I'm obsessed with this fucking movie now.
No, I have not seen it yet. I played Drunken Jeopardy with some youth football coaches on Saturday night. Got kind of crazy. Had my
you
first.
You know multiple youth football coaches?
Multiple, I do. I know a lot of people. Had my first real hangover in probably 10 years on
really?
Sunday morning. Oh, it was bad, my friend. Yeah. No, I can't say 10
no,
years.
No, no,
I can't
you,
say 10
no,
years.
No, that's bullshit. I've been with
worst,
you at conventions.
The
no.
worst hangover I've ever had was at the first MAGFest.
I was going to say, I've been with conventions you where it was really tough for you on a Sunday to even get up, so you can't say that.
No, it's always tough for me to get up on a Sunday because I sleep weird, but the worst hangover I ever had was at MAGFest.
Well, I've seen you drinking into the wee hours of the morning at conventions before.
Yeah, that doesn't always equal a hangover.
You've slunk it into the room into your bed at like 4 a.m. I've been there before. So like,
some people stay up late.
So I'm saying, though, those are probably half hangovers, half you were up late.
I know my hangovers.
Okay, okay.
But MAGFest. Right, MAGFest was MAGFest was a bad one. So I can't say 10 years.
With Johnny D?
That was with a lot of people. I mean, yeah.
Well, John DeLee is always blacked out, whiskey drunk at MAGFest.
We drank until 7:30 in the morning, and then I had to get up at 10:30, and we had to be out of the hotel room at 11. It was wonderful. I remember waking up and pushing myself up off the ground and just screaming into the floor for like 30 seconds that day. Anyways, Drunken Jeopardy with the youth football coaches went well. It was fun.
Did you actually like play a game, or was it like a board game? Or was it?
You know how Norm sets up Jeopardy at like the conventions and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's like a web browser
app. There's an app.
Okay.
Yeah, and then it was interspersed with drinking mini games.
Well, who came up with the questions then? That's one of you questions.
One of their sons, Jack, who is 25. It was all like nerd based questions. But yeah, after like every few rounds of questions, there was a drinking game.
Okay.
And that got out of hand. I had to drink a shot of 99 bananas, which is not something I have had since I was probably, under the legal drinking age.
I never even heard of that shot before.
Oh, 99 bananas? 99 is a brand.
Bananas.
It is a brand of bottom barrel flavored schnapps.
Oh, that sounds bad.
Yeah. Okay. It's called 99 because it's 99 proof. So it's like 48.5% alcohol. So it's more than most hard liquors. And it tastes like burning and then an artificial flavor. They do like blueberry, banana. Banana's the real popular
it's a,
one.
It's like a schnapps thing. It's not like a malt.
No, no, it's a schnapps.
It's a schnapps.
I can't imagine what a malt. Well, okay, yeah, you could do like a single malt whiskey. I was thinking like a malt beverage. Anyways.
I'm thinking Mad Dog 2020. That's one thing I was going to say.
Mad Dog 2020 is a fortified wine.
It's malt, though. It's not?
No, it's fortified wine.
I've drank enough of that in college to know it's awful either way.
It definitely hurts you the next morning because it's all sugar.
Great Mad Dog. Holy shit.
There's two varieties of Great Mad Dog, too. You can get the 13.5% alcohol version, or you can get, like, there's an 18% Grape Mad Dog that is just...
That's probably the one I was forced to chug. That was probably the one I was forced to down gross, a fucking man. Bottle. It's and gross. People would say, well, the whatever the aqua color one, that's the good Mad Dog. There's no good Mad Dog. There's none of them.
Bling Bling Blue Raspberry? No.
None of them. Oh, that's the name. Okay.
Yeah. No. Like
I never say that.
There's a little chain and it says bling bling on it.
None of the Mad Dog is good. None of them.
The Key Lime Pie Mad Dog. You can taste the crust.
I'd say, I drank a lot the first 2 years of college, 2.5 years. I still drank stuff, you know, junior year, senior year, it's college. But there's stuff I will never drink again that I drank in college, including Jim Beam. Stuff I'll never touch again.
But
from drinking too much of it.
Other than that, I went out for Korean barbecue yesterday. First time since the pandemic. Hadn't had it in ages. Forgot how much I love Korean barbecue.
Did it seem semi-normal?
Yeah.
Like in terms of like the process of you got your meats and your little...
Yep, it was one of the all-you-can-eat ones. It was delicious. I definitely overate, as I usually do at a Korean barbecue. Got the meat sweats. Had myself a good meat sleep last night.
I've only been to, the one Korean barbecue with you?
That's it?
After SoCal?
Oh, the one with... we went with Andre and Yoshi and... No, we've done Korean barbecue
twice.
A few times.
We've done two or three times.
Because we did... there was the one time we went with... it was Andre, Yoshi, and Gerard was there. I think maybe Alex, too.
Maybe the other one. Ian gets hyper-focused at Korean barbecues.
I do.
He gets, like, into the zone. It's interesting because, like, we'll be having conversations and Ian will be, like, fucking, like, we don't exist and dead focus on the meats.
Mm-hmm.
Getting the meats. Like, it's good. You need someone to focus on the meats. and get it cooked. It's very strategic because if no one takes responsibility of getting the meats cooked, no one eats.
Yeah, someone's got to be the meat captain.
Yeah, Ian's usually the meat captain. I'm usually secondary. If there's a second one, I'm the secondary meat captain. You got to have it. You got to have someone turn it. It's like someone at a barbecue, a grilling. You got to have someone.
But if you don't delegate that to someone, or if you don't have someone who steps up and takes it, then you have people flipping the meats too many times. You got to let them sit.
Willy nilly, you
clash with the tongs. There's got to be order.
Keep the meat separated, just in case there's some weird allergy. Now Ian and me, we have our disagreements on certain stuff, but when it comes to food, our concentric circles pretty almost matched.
Our Venn diagram,
is that what it is? Venn diagram? Yeah, we're like 98% there in terms of food.
We're almost in focus
in terms of food stuff.
I can be a bit more picky on Mexican food than you can.
I wouldn't say you're more picky with Mexican food. I mean, a little hoity-toity. Take that
hoity-toity.
Well, I disagree on a couple things, but we're there.
I'm a little easier on pizza, I think.
You're pizza? Well, I want real pizza from the East Coast.
So do I. I've also been out here for 16 years, and sometimes I just got to have pizza.
I've been out here for 12 years.
Yep.
I mean,
a lot of things can change in that four to five years.
Oh, really? Yeah. I'm going to get a lot more.
Yeah.
In the next 4 years, I was going to fuck it all. What did I do this weekend, Ian?
What did you do this weekend?
Thanks for asking. I played and reviewed... Jesus, what game did I play and review?
Played and reviewed Jesus, that classic game.
Jesus 64.
Jesus 64.
Well, I just played Golden Nugget 64.
How was it?
It's pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good variety of games on there?
There's 10 games, including 9 table games and 6 slots.
Oh, okay.
And what's most impressive about it is like, the sounds are all authentic. They must have went to casinos and like got actual sounds of machines. Or even like the backgrounds when you're in the casino. Like you're not walking around the casino, you select it from a menu, but then it's all 3D. The craps is really good. You can even shake the dice using the analog. You see the arm go like
that. Oh, that's neat. Blackjack, craps, 5-card roulette, 7-card video, 7-card stud, 5-card draw, video poker, Texas Hold'em, big 6-wheel, similar to roulette, it says, mini baccarat, and slot machines.
The big 6-wheel is just like a wheel, like down the shore. It's just the wheel you spin. It pays 2-1, 5-1.
Gotcha.
Terrible odds. I don't know if the odds are worse than roulette. Roulette odds are not great either. House edge, I think, is 10% in roulette, something like that. But it even tells you all the rules. Mini baccarat's weird. I couldn't get it. It's literally like you don't do anything. It's like, oh, bet on the house or you bet on the player to win on the cards. It's like the highest to get to, I think, 9 points or something.
Guess which hand is closer to 9 without going over.
But like you feel like you have no control over anything, unlike blackjack where you do. It's so weird. That's why you watch those James Bond movies. They're playing baccarat. It's like they're not really doing anything. They're just like betting. That's all. They're not really like they're getting a card. Like you don't do anything. It's not like poker where you decide what to hand over or you know what cards.
Right.
And 7 or 5 cards. 7-card stud is interesting. Not to get into it, because like you start with
7-card stud is neat.
1 card face up, and then 4 face down, 2 face up for each player, and then you do the best 5-card hand. It's a very interesting strategy because you see at least a couple of the cards the other players have. No, I think it's the first and last are face up. So it seems there's less there's more randomness than Hold'em, Texas Hold'em, but it's on the same lines. You can see what the other player kind of has.
You can get an idea of what they have.
But Texas Hold'em is still the GOAT poker game. It's still the best.
Seven Card Stud was actually how I learned how to play poker. That's the poker game my dad taught me when I was younger.
Five Card Stud is still just the ridiculous, well, I don't know what you have, and you could be bluffing out. There's almost no strategy involved in Five Card Stud.
Sure.
It's just like, well, how many cards are given away? One, two, three, or four. And what do they have?
Learned five card, but we played seven card because it was more fun. I learned Texas Hold'em in late high school.
Five card is like the beginners just to learn how to make a hand.
You learn the rules, yeah.
But like, there's no strategy. You don't know what the player can potentially have at all besides how many cards are taken out.
Poker, great game.
And then I played I can't remember what I just reviewed before that. I cannot believe I can't remember what I just wrote before that and got done.
Shillelias and Shamrocks, 97.
Supreme Court had an NCAA ruling. The only reason I bring this up, it was brought to my attention because we brought up the NCAA a couple months ago, and it's been on our hit list of hot topics about how we can't stand that student athletes aren't paid anything.
They don't get shit. Not only do they not get shit, they're restricted on what they can even receive.
So there was a unanimous unanimous Supreme Court ruling that came out that said the NCAA can't limit some benefits to student athletes.
Unanimous.
I know. They said that the NCAA went too far in blocking some educator-related relief for student athletes. So this doesn't mean they can get paid yet, but it opens that door for potential future litigation and lawsuits. It's the beginning of the end for that. Basically, it was an antitrust law is what it was. Dismissed the organization's argument that antitrust laws doesn't apply to the case. So basically it is. Antitrust law can apply to the NCAA. So that's good.
Yeah, I'm happy to hear it.
So that's good. It's good to get a 9-0. Supreme Court ruling. We've had a couple recently, so it's good to get. Oh, this is a slam dunk one. We're all on the same page. Doesn't matter. That's good. Video Game Years premiered on my site. Re-premiered. The full episodes were not on my. On my YouTube page. 77 came out. Oh, the glory of the 1977 Video Game Years that were produced in 2012. Why your eyes go like that, Ian? why did your eyes do that involuntarily?
It's a little rough. I think that episode's probably a little harsh.
It get better. There was some smoothing out in 77. I'm doing one every Monday. It's the summer of video game years. So it'll be one literally every the whole summer up until I think September, around 4 months from now. There's 13 episodes. So that's three months. That's a season, Pat. Yeah. So the whole summer you get video game years.
Yeah.
So get out your jams, get your little floaties on, put on some sunscreen, and watch some video game years. Every Monday it's a premiere. Come in the chat. Ian might show up for one. He won't show up till like 80, I think. He'll show up at 80 or 81.
I know. I really can't watch myself. I can't do it. I can't.
You watch your clips of yourself? Why? Because you were freshly shaved?
No, I don't watch clips of myself on this either. I read the comments, but I don't watch the clips.
Oh, you just wait in the comments?
I load it up. I immediately hit pause, and then I scroll down.
Pay yourself and me. Hit play and just mute it.
Oh, okay. That works.
Just scroll down. Come on. You're costing us
ad
dollars.
I don't know. I don't know. I figure once I click the link, I've done my job. I don't know. I didn't know you have to let it run.
No, plus and it kills the average watch time.
Oh, okay.
So you're killing. Right, no,
you're making a good point. I will simply hit mute from this point on.
Yes, mute. Okay.
When you're right, you're right, and you're right.
All right. That was a Spaceballs quote.
Yes.
When you're right, you're right, and you're always right. Barf. Rest in peace, John Candy. Gone way too soon. What was I going to say? You see that Code Legend Mega Man Kickstarter?
Yeah, it's kind of neat.
I'm not familiar with this line of products, but it's a like programmable, device that basically teaches you programming and interaction. And this is a little...
It's one of those kits that gets kids into like programming the STEM field and stuff like that. It's supposed to, you know, energize their brain and get it ready for the technological future that they are inheriting.
I'm trying to see the other Code Legend products. So this is a Kickstarter. It's a Capcom official product. You basically make like a Power Glove type of controller. That's what you're basically doing here. And using it on, you know, with your computer program that has... It looks like it has, what is that, Mega Man 2 built in?
Yep.
And you can learn how to program. You like, it shows you like twisting the gauntlet and moving it in order to jump and to move and to fire. And you can swap out cards in order to change the weapons. And it's just, it's neat.
And
it's
teaches you apparently how to program a Mega Man game as well. So it's not just the little handheld
part.
As well. Yeah, okay. Use the original Mega Man assets from character sprites and stages to the iconic Mega Buster sound effect to program a real Mega Man game.
So we're dumb when it comes to STEM in the U.S. So anything that could help out and help us learn here, if you like Mega Man, there you go. Get into a 4 or 5 year old's hand. I wish there was stuff like this back in the day. That'd be great.
Yeah, I do too. I'm always amazed at like the toys kids have, and I look at them and I get kind of jealous.
Sometimes. No, I'm totally jealous.
I just don't go out and buy them and use them, but I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then I find out my niece over Christmas got like this hydraulic claw that her and my dad built together. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, like you put your hand in and you pull on the, you know, stick your fingers and it gives you like the, yeah, it was cool. And I see all these and it's like, these are cool toys. They're actually like learning experiences, but they're also awesome to play with.
There's a sprite editor built in to this, looking at this Kickstarter. You can, let's see, there's a guidebook that includes columns about the game industry, so you can learn about the actual business as you practice programming. Wow. So this is almost like a learning tool for the whole, I guess, programming, you know, a game, like the whole industry. That's really interesting. You get these little blocks to make it. So these are almost like Legos are 3D, but they're more intense Lego blocks because the spacing is all different. For
different connecting points and stuff like that.
To make something more 3D-ish, it looks like. Yeah, really cool. It's not cheap, though. But that's all right. It's going to cost you like $250 to get this set up. But no, if you know someone into this, go for it.
I think it looks neat.
From Artek, the name you can trust, selling educational goods since 1960. There you go. I've been selling goods since 2000, and I don't know, 16 at ultimatenintendo.com, where you could check out guidebooks. You can check out RBI baseball stickers.
Good.
Enamel pins. Was it really? Or are you just being facetious? And t-shirts.
It amused me.
I sold a My Man t-shirt for us last week.
Oh, really?
We still have some My Man shirts left from a few years ago. We still got a few left. And the limited shirts, of course. We got those going on there.
Get them now before the remaining stock goes to a Ross near you. TJ Maxx.
TJ Maxx. I'll show it on the rack up front.
Get your CU podcast shirt at
so
TJ Maxx.
I was like, some of those clothes, it was like, oh, how is this 90% off? It must really want. Marked down from $80 JCPenney, $5.99. That's why you love Marshalls or TJ Maxx. And I'm on Cameo. I just got a Cameo request while I was prepping the podcast. I'm wishing someone a 40th birthday. There you go.
Oh-ho!
That's
nice.
Awesome. There you go. 40's not so bad. A couple creaks and more aches and pains there. And Twitch, Wednesday night is 80s night. Twitch.tv/countrycode. He even appeared one time. It was fun.
You might see me again at some point.
You may see. That's like a comic book villain.
Yeah.
You might see me again.
I'll be back. You just don't know when. GTA servers are shutting down in December.
All of them? Every single one?
No. For 360 and PS3.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I didn't.
Everyone got panicked for a second.
Didn't mean to make your butt clench if you're into GTA. So, yeah, it's finally moving on. So this is for obviously the GT Grand Theft Auto Online. It's had an incredibly long run. We were kind of talking about this a little bit last night. There wasn't even a GTA for the PS4 or Xbox One. Well, I guess you could say GTA Online, but it's really just based on 5, and they kept adding stuff to it. But I guess that's where all the development time went to. It'll be interesting to see if we actually ever get a GTA 6. But I think we're going to start seeing support for servers for PS3 and 360 games go down pretty quickly here. I mean, it's two generations behind at this point.
I'm talking 15 years for the 360 since it came out. Holy shit.
Yeah, to what, 2006? That's nuts.
Yeah.
It's crazy. There are people who are almost adults now who
grew up with it. They were 5 years old. Now they're drinking just about.
That tells you how long I've been at Luna, because the 360 was like brand new when I started at Luna. Yeah, exactly.
And that was the Wii was hot, just came out too. Yeah, the Wii is 15 years old as well this year. Fives and zeros in the CU podcast.
Fives and zeros, it's what we love.
Yeah. That's nuts when you think about it. I was in my little garden apartment in Jersey.
I feel less about this, I guess, than I do something like the online store, you know, going down. It's nice to have that access to the stuff you bought, but I can't expect companies to keep servers up forever for their online games.
So they'll be up till September.
December.
Oh, there's shark cards? What the hell are those?
Shark cards are money cards.
You'll be able to buy those until September 15th.
Gotcha.
However, you won't be able to get a refund or transfer your digital currency or virtual items to another platform.
Oh,
so yeah. Spend wisely. And I also saw Max Payne 3 multiplayer is also going away. They also added that. I forgot that Max Payne is a property.
It's a person.
That Rockstar has.
Yeah.
Because they don't focus on anything else anymore besides GTA, basically. And a Red Dead game every 5-6 years. That's what they got.
That's what they
bring back. Midnight Club, for God's sake. Can we go to Midnight Club? Come on. You're killing me.
That's what everyone asks for in the store.
I can't take that much work and effort to peel away a few of, you know, 20 people from your fucking huge team of GTA Online. Come on. I got to beg for these games that I used to like. Unreal Tournament, Midnight Club. I'm like, come on. Just feed me something every 5-10 years. That's all I'm asking.
A little treat.
You got money? Yeah. Like, I'm a seal. Like, give me a little fish.
Give
me a sardine.
I was going to say, give Pat a sardine.
What were you going to say? A sardine?
Sardine.
Is that what they feed seals?
I don't think it's sardines.
They're like a bigger ones.
Yeah, they're bigger. I don't.
My grandfather loved the sardine sandwich.
Really?
And with onions. And that's like an old timey, like Depression era thing. Obviously, but sardines are good.
It's also an Italian thing, I think. Italy and Spain do all of that, like really fancy. Like, there's a term for it now. I can't remember it. Like canned seafood, okay. But like it's not like you would think like, you know, like a can of tuna. No, it's like high quality shit.
Yeah, it's
like mussels and sardines and
it's a full sardine. You buy sardines, right? You get a full sardines are a good protein source. Not to talk about what my grandfather ate when he was 15, 16 years old, but like, yeah.
I feel like that's something we've lost as time has gone on.
Sardines?
Our desire to eat strong-scented things on bread or sandwiches. My dad's grandfather, according to my dad, used to always sit around and eat Limburger and onion on cracker. And it's like, are you just trying to find like the most potently like...
My German grandfather loved liverwurst.
I actually like liverwurst.
And my mom used to buy it a lot. And so one time she bought it and it went bad and there was fungus on it. And I never ate it again after that.
Liverwurst and Braunschweiger, which I think is just a different kind of liver sausage.
I never heard of that one. But liverwurst, for a good time my childhood, you'd have a liverwurst sandwich. Not probably good to eat. You know, it's probably one of the worst lunch meats you can probably have in terms of like salt and fat content. Now looking back,
so good though.
It was good though, with cheese on it, you know?
Liverwurst and mustard.
Or mustard. Yeah, mustard. You can't put mayo.
Ooh, no.
Ah. No.
Ooh.
I know some people that put mayo on bologna. One time I had mayo on bologna. They're passing out sandwiches. It was like I had a friend named Conrad. No, that was a little brother Conrad. Vince. His name was Vince. And he had two au pairs that took care of him. I would hang out with him a lot. Where are you, Vince? What happened to you? You're a little violent little kid, but we got along for a couple of years. Went to a park one time. And, you know, the two au pairs, they're maybe South African. They had weird accents. I can't remember. I was like eight, nine. Went to the park, giving out sandwiches. He had a sister and a brother and me. And I bit into the sandwich, and it was bologna with mayo. And I almost fucking threw up how awful bologna with mayo is. I can do mayo maybe on a ham sandwich. Not my preference. I can do it. I can't do it on bologna. Awful.
I like mayo on a ham sub.
On a ham sub? Slather that. Turkey breast is great with. Turkey breast with Swiss.
I like subs can be tough because I do like mayo and the oil and vinegar on a ham sub, but you got to be light on the mayo. You can't have too much, otherwise it just turns into a disgusting soup.
And then it gets the bun soaks it up, and you have a mayo-y, soggy. No, handheld virtual boy was made. People are like, oh, you guys are talking about video games.
I don't care.
Do the podcast forever. We're going to talk about whatever we want.
We can talk about whatever we want. Yeah. You can come along for the ride or you don't have to. It's really how it is at the end of the day. Shank mods are pals. Maybe they're our pals. I don't know. Maybe they hate us. Maybe they love us.
Is it a pal or pals? Is it
pal? Multiple? Pal. We've talked about them before. They did the really cute Altoid tin.
Name came up. I was like, that name sounds familiar. Shank mods. And that was like 2 years ago. They did the Altoid size Wii.
Yep.
Which is amazing.
It was awesome. Yeah. And I'm sure we've talked about them more than that, but they now have done a portable handheld virtual boy called the Real Boy. And I love the look of this thing. It's awesome.
And it fits on the stand. Yeah, yeah. It fit on the original stand too.
So they, I'm not a technical person, but they consolized it, gave it a backlight.
Sorry.
And, you know, the way they set it up is great. They use the D-pad and the two buttons that would be on the controller. They put on the sides of it, and it looks really nice. It displays in red. I thought I saw somewhere that you could change what color it displays in, but I could be wrong on that. I know a lot of emulators let you do that. I have no idea if this lets you do it or not. But it's very cool to see all the same.
Yeah. Obviously,
you can. You can change the color.
Oh, thank God. So obviously, he cannibalized a Virtual Boy, but it's like, well, you got to, you know, make a real boy omelet. You got to break some Virtual Boy eggs.
You got to break some eggs to make an omelet.
Break a Virtual Boy egg. And it goes through the microcontroller stuff in here. It's above my pay grade, testing stuff with voltmeters and what have you. And I wonder, in another time and place, you know, if Nintendo ever acknowledges the Virtual Boy, which I don't think they ever have, even in their little history of Nintendo stuff, they just don't even mention the Virtual Boy. Even as like, hey, we did a Virtual Boy, we screwed up. Could be funny. People laugh at it. They don't even do that. Would there be a time where they would release, just for funsies, put it on the Switch shop, here's the Virtual Boy collection, you can play it. Like, why not? Here you go. $10, here's like 5 Virtual Boy games. You know, like something like that. I'm just shocked that like they wouldn't even try it. Just for the lulz, I think people would buy it, you know, and try it out.
And the thing is, there are some good games on there. Like, it's not the games that are bad. You know, no, Nintendo made the games. There are some fun games on there. It's simply the system is a pain in the ass to use, and no one wants to do it.
It would create buzz. It would get trending on Twitter if they did like in a random, say like at the, you know, they just did their Nintendo Direct E3. We have, oh, here's the Virtual Boy thing, and here's the collection. People be like, wow, Virtual Boy. That was a colossal failure, Nintendo. Your biggest ever. But it would be a jokey thing, but I think people would. You got to go back to even your bad history and sort of like mine it a little bit, in my opinion. You
know? Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm trying to think if they even like included anything Virtual Boy related in like the statues in Smash Brothers Melee or the spirits in Smash Brothers Ultimate. I mean, they pull from a lot of history there, and I'm struggling to think of something.
You got Mr. Game & Watch as a character, so they love the Game & Watch. That's what, you know, opened them up, you know, help open up the whole video game a world to them even more, even before the arcades hit it big for them, was Game & Watch. So, I mean, like, yeah, no, not Virtual Boy. That was an embarrassment to them, you know. Well, what are you going to do, right?
So, apparently, there is a Tellaro Boxer. Oh. Harry from Tellaro Boxer is the only spirit to represent a Virtual Boy game in Ultimate.
There, oh, really?
One. One.
So, Tellaro Boxer. Did he work on that? I think at all, the guy's doing Smash. What the hell's his name? Sakura. Did he work on Teller Boxer?
I have no idea.
Maybe he did. And I'm looking at the Wikipedia.
I don't think so.
Maybe one of his friends did. It's like, hey, can you put it in here for me? Right. No, he didn't work on it. I'm looking at it.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. That's funny.
That's funny.
The only one.
Just a robot spirit that shows up, or you can get, or whatever. What is it?
You don't know what the spirits are? You have the game. They're enhancement cards that you attach to your character in the adventure mode to give yourself boosts and stats.
I played it for like 3 days, Ultimate, I think. I played Kirby. Yeah, you start with Kirby. Yeah, I played it. I didn't play multiplayer. No, I tried to play multiplayer. I don't think I got a good connection.
All right. Super Mario widescreen.
So Super Mario World got a ROM hack.
No.
It's available for download. natively enhanced to work with modern screens. This is from Hacker Villela on Twitter. The true 2021 gaming experience mixed with the wonderful 1990 gaming golden age. You can download it on GitHub before Nintendo's ninjas put a throwing star into his face. So it's amazing. Turn the audio off there. It's amazing that people, you know, are so awesome that they could do stuff like this. I would think this obviously be a game-to-game sort of hack. You couldn't, this isn't one size fits all unless
absolutely not.
But it's amazing because you're looking at the intro screen of Super Mario, which we've all seen a billion times, and now you're seeing extra stuff on the left and right, and like that's really interesting.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to check this out yet, but we mentioned it a few weeks back when we talked about the Sonic Origin collection. I'm actually very excited to see Sonic in widescreen. This will be fun to check out. So this was developed with the intent of being used on PCs, but apparently you can... via RetroArch, you can also play it on several platforms using the BSNES beta, HD beta core.
There you go. So you can play it on an emulator.
It's very cool.
I doubt it would destroy your flash cart, though. It probably would.
Yeah, no, I don't think that would be good.
I wouldn't recommend that. That probably would not play right. Yeah, brought up with the Sonic, that, you know, it's good to have, you see more stuff left and right. Super Mario doesn't go as fast as Sonic does. It's probably not as necessary, but it's, like I said, it's still ingenious.
Well, it's a very gorgeous game too, and getting to see more of that while you're playing is fantastic.
Yeah, I'm guessing then they probably also had it, like, even when you usually hit stuff off screen, you hear it. So there's probably some code in the game where it's like, well, it knows where the shells are on the enemies.
Yeah,
because even the original Super Mario,
it's got to keep track of that.
Even the original
stuff.
Super Mario Brothers, you hit stuff off screen. You heard it, hit it. So like the game knows the stuff is there. Now we just see it. It's brilliant, Ian. It's brilliant. These people are smarter than me. It's fantastic. Speaking of people smarter than me, I remember what I said, Ian, about when we covered the Intellivision Amico E3, how it's going to be a weird turning point in terms of coverage.
And it has been.
And it happened 3-4 days after us talking about it. We're starting to get more and more mainstream media coverage now that did not exist before. Before, it was just idiots like me and you and other YouTubers following this, and not really anyone else besides random articles here and there.
But now we have respected game journalists throwing down their opinions on it and talking about some of the things that don't line up. Cat's out of the bag. You can't control the narrative on your console forever. And much like when the information was first released about the Amico and we covered it and we had, you know, Tommy scrambling into mentions to try to control things or say things that were said directly on their website or in their presentations were wrong or no longer accurate because they realized suddenly it didn't sound good or wasn't going to sell their system.
Criticizing people for not knowing things that weren't on the website.
Right. Before we get into it, one of the things that drives me craziest about this is but Tommy, by doing this, has basically said that the official channels that you can get information on this from are useless. I mean, that's what he's doing by arguing this in every comment section and in every Twitter thread, is saying that what we have seen is not what we've seen and we need something else. Which, I don't know, if I'm the person who's putting together these presentations or these things for him, I got to feel like I'm being thrown under the bus constantly. It's kind of ridiculous. So, yeah, now it's going to... So, Jeff Gerstmann from Giant Bomb, they...
Highly respected game journalist. I have been around the industry for, I think, 20 years.
I tried to watch it. At work, I kept getting interrupted, so I only saw, like, the first 3 minutes of it. But apparently, he did not have much good to say about it.
Oh, no. The Giant Bomb cast folks, they did not have positive things to say.
One of the things that I did notice that they said early on that I was happy someone pointed out was how ridiculous it was for Tommy to be like, I'm so proud to be part of this. Like, and they were like, why? You paid for it.
Well,
that's one of the things that drives me craziest about this Intellivision messaging is how they act like everything. They really pump up every license they get like it's going to legitimize them and like they came to them to work with them, but they didn't. You're buying licenses, you're buying time at E3. Anyone can do that if they want to. It doesn't make you special.
It's a constant scramble for legitimacy and to know that we belong. We belong. See, we have this. We belong. We belong. It's real. Right. And it gets tired and...
I mean, down to the point where, like, and this is, you know, this is one of those things that happened, like, 6-7 months ago, and people aren't going to remember it always. But I think one of the most ridiculous things was the announcement that they were partnering with Tops for their gift cards or something like that. It's like, great, you found... Tops is providing you with your gift cards. It's not like they begged you to join the Intellivision Amico team.
You're paying Tops to produce your cards. It's like saying you're partnering with McDonald's to get a Big Mac. It's like, no, you're not partnering. They're giving you a product.
You're buying a Big Mac from McDonald's.
Yes.
We're partnering with McDonald's for a large fry.
Exactly. So now you have game journalists that have been around the block for decades that have seen the highs and lows of the industry. They've gone to E3s in person since potentially the 90s. They know how this works, this game works. Now you have respected journalists commenting on this that Jeff Gerson was following this before. Based upon what he was saying, he's been following this behind the scenes. I think a lot of game journalists have been following this behind the scenes, but just probably didn't think it was proper to comment on it until now when E3 had their big presentation. They had a big presentation, and now it's more publicly known entity.
Their big coming out party.
Yes, Ian. I don't know why you use that expression. It's a difference between when like little YouTubers talking to Tommy. That's not going to be covered by game journalists because it's not official. First of all, second of all, it's not worth their time, or they don't know about it. Right? They don't probably know about it. That we've been commenting on this for now. It's going to be almost 4 years come this fall that this was first announced. So, but now it's worth their time. Now it's at E3. Everyone else saw this. They have to comment on it now, and they will start following more. So there is a lot of tweets about this, and most of them were not good in terms of ones that got the most reception. And Ars Technica, he's been in the industry since the 90s. Sam Matkovich talked about what we talked about how it was weird to have Photoshopped images of stock photos of Photoshopping your controller and getting rid of Microsoft or Sony commercials, how weird that was and how that did not give you confidence in potentially the product.
See, I don't think that that's really the biggest thing. People do use stock photos, but the one thing I want to point out to people who are constantly pointing out that this is something that's done is when Nintendo doctors a photo or Sony doctors a photo for an advertisement, it's reasonable to assume that it's a truthful representation of something because they have a track record.
Because these people are too smiley in their pictures or they're having too much fun?
What I'm just saying is Intellivision doesn't have a track record.
No.
Sony, Nintendo, Microsoft, a lot of these companies that do this have a track record. You want to see from a company that does not have a track record, you want to see real legitimate stuff.
I don't think, though, that Nintendo, Microsoft, or Sony Photoshopped out their competitors' products and image. I'd be shocked if you showed.
Saying that this is what people do with stock photos. I'm giving my
reason. Like Amazon, you see someone like, I don't know, they have like a potato chip clip, and you see someone smiling with their bag of potato chips. But that's fine. But that's a product that already exists for sale usually when you see that stock photo. Yes. And again, this is a video game system. It's a little more complicated than that to me.
However, our friend Frank Cifaldi said, and I agree with this more, in response to that, I'd look into the $11 million in investment claims that seem to include non-committal pledges and 100% refundable pre-order revenue, game footage that hasn't changed since E3 2019, and a revolving door of people on the team before I look into uses stock photos.
Well,
so
sounds like Frank knows some more potentially behind-the-scenes stuff.
I mean, all you have to do is look at the footage, and you see that nothing has really changed.
Revolving door of people on the team. I'd love to know what engineers came and went. That's right. You commented. He probably saw the same thing you saw. Like you saw the Night Stalker footage. You said, I don't think that's different footage of Night Stalker.
I don't know.
So,
but I think, revolving door, that's Perrin Kaplan. I don't think we haven't heard about her in ages. She was supposed to be on the team.
That was the Nintendo one?
That was the Nintendo one.
Nintendo play.
And Jay Allard.
Oh, he's gone. Jay Allard. I checked Jay Allard's LinkedIn. I don't think he has Intellivision on his LinkedIn. Like, he didn't even have it on that.
Right.
That he worked.
But some of these people that he loved to tout, we haven't seen since that first big video that was, more of an investor pitch than anything.
Yeah. Either way, this is, like I said, it's going to get weirder and weirder. And now, instead of like Tommy just, sicking his little insulated cult members on us, he's going to try to sick them on these journalists, and it ain't going to work. They're not going to like bow to that. We didn't bow to any of that, but like these mob type tactics are not going to work with like IGN or GameSpot or Ars Technica or Polygon or Kotaku. It ain't going to work.
Well, whether or not the stock photos is a sticking point when there's lots of other things to look at. One of the responses I was happy to see, Sam Makovich's response to Tommy trying to do that, Tommy immediately tried to pull his classic card, which was, hey, get a hold of me. We can do an interview. He always wants to do stuff on his terms in a private setting where he can control the narrative. Sure. He always wants to hit you with some insider info or some behind the scenes sneak peek of something and schmooze you up. Yeah. And he's like, no, I'm happy to talk online until you have review hardware to send. And that was the response that I'd like to see. And Tommy's not used to that. These are all people who are so connected to Tommy and truly believe he's their friend. And, you know, he's not expecting real journalists to push back. He hasn't had that yet because he's just dealing with small time YouTubers.
Yeah. Send you a sweatshirt and that gets you on my good side. And, you know,
P.S. I don't think I'm a journalist, nor have I ever claimed to be. I'm just a talking head.
We're talking heads. Not the band, though. Talking heads. Yeah, I think he straight up asked Tommy in there, is this going to come out in the Twitter thread? He didn't get a response. Is this going to come out in October?
Right.
And
Tommy said that he gave a quick response and said that he could source. They have until end of July to source the parts.
Okay.
I would love them to get the parts because then I think we'll see that there's nothing, that nothing has been done on the.
I think what it comes down to
the games front
is the games. I think at this point, if we're still seeing the same footage of games over the past couple of years, there should be investors and people that pre-ordered should hold in television and Tommy's feet to the fire and say, okay, how complete are these games you are showing us? Are these demos? Are these proof of concepts? What are these at this point? How many of these games are actually 100% complete and ready to go? Because if this was to come out last October, hardware doesn't matter. The game should still be being worked on and being completed.
And I'm sorry, Tommy, that I don't have an accurate number here. You can correct me if I'm off by one or two. But I'm pretty sure the game system was supposed to launch with 45 or 50 games. Then they dropped to 35. And then the last thing I heard was 29. So they're even starting to cut down the amount of games this thing was supposed to launch with.
But even the packing games, are they complete? These are things we have to know or should know before this comes out. You'd throw money at the software even if the hardware was not. Because, hey, we can't produce it. Great. You still have money from investors, private and on Republic. You still have pre-order money. Great. Use that money to complete the fucking games. Pay the devs to complete the games. Show up. I can't say 20-minute walkthrough. There's no game in Amico that lasts 20 minutes. But, how about a walkthrough of some of these games that you have? How about a demo of Cornhole playing a complete game with four people? Why aren't we seeing these videos? At all.
If this is supposed to come out in October, you would think that you would, especially if there's motion controls and things that you, in a packing game, like one that they're really promoting,
yeah,
you'd think that you might see a demo of it actually being played. This is how it works.
I want Cornhole being played. I want to see the Cornhole.
With controllers, not a phone.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure we could do that at some point. So, all right. Well, that's about it. It's like I said, it's a weird turning point. It's going to get weirder. It's gonna be a bumpy summer and fall, I think, when it comes to this.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
All right, Ian, the fine folks at Blaze sent us both an Evercade handheld.
Yeah.
Review copies. Thanks to them for doing that. And we played them, and we're going to give our thoughts and a review of it. They also sent us a few extra games besides the three packed in the box. So we got some multi-carts.
So I will say, I mean, this is a year after it came out. We're not exactly on the cutting edge here, but it's important to bring up because some of my concerns, I think, with the system are actually being addressed in the months going forward. We can bring up. So I when the Evercade was announced, I honestly just thought it was another, I'm going to be honest, another garbage emulation device. Didn't really have a whole lot of interest in it. I thought that they were doing cartridges was neat.
Sure.
It came out immediately. There were some less than stellar reviews. The buttons were backwards, et cetera.
The B and A were swapped.
But Blaze, to their credit, got a firmware update out very quickly that fixed that so that the BNA were normal again. The unit itself, from what my experience with the actual unit, is that it's pretty solid.
It's solid.
I like the way it feels. I like the buttons. I love the D-pad. I adore the D-pad. The buttons feel nice. The shoulder buttons are a little like Sega Saturn-y clicky. I'm not like great on those. But it's a nice looking unit, and it feels well built. If you look online, you'll see some reviews that say they've had problems with it. But one thing that I've noticed throughout my research into the Evercade is apparently their customer service is fantastic. If you have a problem, they send you out a new unit just about immediately so that there's no issues. I like the way the cartridges look, and I like the way the cartridges fit in the back of the system.
Yeah, at first I was like, what direction this goes in? I was like, okay, it makes sense. You see it from the front when you put it in, and when you slide it in, it completes the form factor of the back of the case, but it still has the nicely the name on the back. I mean, that's pretty cute. It's smart, to do that.
So I like that about it. The games themselves. This is where
I was going to talk about the console.
Okay,
real quick.
Go for it.
It's a 4.3-inch LCD. Importantly, you could keep it at 4:3 ratio or widescreen, even though. You know, in theory, some of these games, especially the newer ones, like the homebrew ones, can be potentially, I guess, in widescreen. But it's good to have that option.
Yeah.
You're not locked into the widescreen LCD because obviously they're probably not manufacturing small LCDs that are 4:3 anymore.
No.
They're probably all 16:9. That's good. To me, the buttons were fine. I usually don't like the glassier buttons, but they were fine. The D-pad, I wasn't as in love with it with Ian, but it was fine for me. I still don't like circular D-pads. With a passion, but it played fine. I played Mappy Kids fine, which I'll get into. I like that the start and select buttons are easily accessible right below the four buttons. I didn't use a game with the triggers at all. And the volume was pretty loud.
I almost wish there was one setting lower than the lowest, because the lowest setting is pretty loud on there.
Speaker is fairly beefy for something like this.
Yeah.
And there's an HDMI mini out. I didn't use that. And there's a headphone out as well. Battery life, I looked up online, was between like 4 and 5 hours.
I think I was getting like 3.5 with heavy play.
Or using brightness.
I was using the brightness setting.
Okay, that's why. So that's I usually don't like high spread. I usually go like middle low for my brightness, like on my cell phone. I don't like super bright. So yeah, substantial. All right, games.
Games seem to be an interesting collection of what's available to license, and then they go from there and they curate it into, you know, sometimes fairly interesting packs. I didn't think this was where the Evercade kind of fell apart for me in its initial pitch, was that a lot of it, like the Namco, there's the Namco cartridges, which I believe are actually only available in the UK. A lot of it was NES versions of games, and I'd rather have the arcade versions of games.
Sure.
But in practice, honestly, picking up and playing the NES version of Mappy for a little while scratches my itch for Mappy. It's fine. They also put some interesting titles on there that you wouldn't normally see, like Starluster got put on there, which is kind of like a... Star Raiders clone by Namco. That was Famicom only, never got a US release. They brought that over here. And then Mappy Kids, which was the first Famicom game I ever owned. There's actually an official translation of it now on the cartridge. It's the first official translation.
On the Namco Museum Collection 1.
And that's not the only game they've done that with. I believe they did it with Magical Drop 2 as well on the Data East collection. It's the first version that was translated into English. I don't think it has all the story mode stuff. But still, it's interesting to see that they're taking these games from other companies that never had an official release over here, doing the translation that's necessary, and bringing it over.
Yeah, that's why it touched on something I didn't think, I guess I didn't appreciate or realize when they announced something like this, is that they're not just grabbing whatever they can, but like you said, like they're putting out something for the first time here we never had a chance to play, like the Mappy Kids, which I did play. I'm like, that's interesting because you're getting the spotlight stuff that people weren't aware of that for whatever reason didn't come out. And that's an interesting part of the equation, which I guess one of the reasons maybe why people are liking this, and there's a growing ecosystem, obviously.
And there's some neat stuff on there, like the Atari cartridge puts Yar's Return on there, which is like a sequel that was made for the Flashback in 2005, I believe. Mm-hmm. There's also the prototype for Tempest on the Atari 2600 is on there. So it's not just the games that you know.
Sure.
I do think that there are some redundancies between the two Atari cartridges because I did order the second one. That, you know, like, so on the first Atari cartridge, you have the 2600 version of a couple of games. Well, on the second one, you get the 7800 version of a couple of games.
I see.
A little bit.
Why don't I just put them both in the same pack?
Or skip the 2600 version if we're going to get repeats.
Well, I would say put them in the same one. 2600, like Centipede on the same
part. So you can compare them, sure. Yeah. But that feels like filler.
Small potatoes.
That feels like filler. What I am most excited about this system for, though, is not the pre-existing collections of stuff that's 15, 20 years old, although that's fun. It's a neat way to see indie developers get their games on physical cartridges and spotlight it on a handheld or on a system that's different than what they normally are. To that credit, I have spent a lot of time with the Mega Cat Studios cartridge since we got it. Now, Mega Cat Studios, they've done games like they're a publisher and a developer, but they also some of these games they've developed, some of them were developed by outside studios. But games like Coffee Crisis, which is fairly well known as a homebrew.
Genesis beat 'em up.
Yeah. Yep, there's a couple more beat 'em ups on there. There's that little Medusa game, Log Jammers, which was a popular kind of like Wind Jammers for the NES. Sure. Game was on there. A lot of little puzzlers, but it's a really good way to get like a taste of the modern indie scene, and that is like especially sure. like the homebrew scene, and that is what they're doing, because these are emulators at this point that are, you know, included on the cartridges that are running these. So you're getting an idea of what the NES homebrew scene, the Super Nintendo homebrew scene, the Genesis homebrew scene. You're getting a snapshot yeah. of all of that,
and they get a physical release, which is cool. These are not games big enough to obviously do like limited run, you know, but like they're,
well, Mega Cat does physical releases of them.
Yeah, that's true, but maybe not for some of the other ones. You're right about that. But they're also doing, look at the indie stuff. Indie Heroes Collection is coming out.
Yeah, that one I would like to pick up.
I got to see, where's the game list on that here? You got games like Doodle World, Alien Cat 2, Kubo 3. I'm not familiar with these. Maybe you are. Twin Dragons, Ploid, Debtor, Quest Arrest. So you get a bunch of, you know, a chance to see some. Twin Dragons looks adorable. You get some 8 and 16-bit sort of games. Oh, that's a Game Boy game, Dadius here. Okay.
Yeah, there's some of the Game Boy homebrews on there too. So with nice all variety. Of these cartridges, you see them attacking different systems as well. So when you start seeing, like, it's exciting to see this Indie Heroes collection that has some of these Game Boy games on there, because then you're like, well, what else can they license from Game Boy that we might sure. see on here in the future?
You could get a Game Boy pack, maybe, if they get, you know.
One thing that I would really like to see is PC Engine stuff. There is that Namco Collection cart 2 that I bought that one too. I bought two carts. I bought that one. Actually, I bought three. I'll get into the other one in a minute. Because that one has Splatterhouse 2 and 3 on it, but not 1.
Yeah,
was,
I noticed
like
that.
If you got PC Engine emulation going on here, it would be awesome to have all three of those on one cart.
I noticed that. I'm like, yeah, I'm like, it's weird to have 2 and 3, but not, you know, 1. I was like, yeah.
Or, you know, it would have been cool to maybe see Wanpaku Graffiti translated, since they've already brought over some other Namco stuff. That would have been cool to see on that cartridge. Mm-hmm. So obviously I can complain about, you know, selection. We all have perfect collections in our head.
Sure. But I mean, it's usually these are like $20 for a collection.
I think they're
with a protective case.
Yeah, the, you know,
which I like, by the way.
Obviously this is,
and it stayed in when I dropped it. Look at that. It works.
They're really appealing to collectors here.
Yeah.
Plastic clamshells, full-color manuals. Definitely should point out full-color manuals.
Oh, yeah.
It's not something you get in even, you know, AAA $60 games anymore.
It's adorable.
And, you know, the collections they go through, and they usually tell you just a little bit of info about them. I went into the... My whole experience with the Evercade was like, this is definitely not my thing. But I've found that it's pretty conducive to picking up and playing. I say this and I mean this the nicest way possible. This could take the place of the Reader's Almanac in the or the Reader's Digest in the bathroom.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you know, put an Evercade on the back of your toilet.
have a little toilet paper holder, but you have an Evercade stand right next to it so you can pick it.
if Evercade is listening, I do have one suggestion. I do have a dream cartridge, and it's one that I feel like that should be doable. I would love a Activision Atari collection.
Oh, that's yeah.
An Activision Atari collection would probably never leave my Evercade. It's exactly what I'm looking for. As of right now, I played a lot of Yars Revenge last night.
Okay.
That's on the Atari collection
too. But Howard Scott Warshaw?
It's one of my favorite video games of all time. Thank you, Howard Scott Warshaw.
Howard's the best.
It's just so good. That game is so good. Anyway.
So your wish list is PC Engine Turbo Games. I agree. That'd be great.
I would love to see that. Love to see an Activision cartridge, and I would really like to see just more modern indie stuff. That's what I would like to see. I think that's, I think after a while you're gonna, you can't go back to, the well is only so deep in terms of stuff that you can publish on these cartridges that people want. So I think modern indie and homebrew is definitely going to be the future for this, or one of the futures. The other thing that they've announced, and this takes care of a lot of the concerns that I mentioned with these carts. They are doing arcade cartridges. They are starting this year, and it's not a lot of those. I don't think come out until October or November. But I think there's a Data East arcade cartridge. There's going to be a Technos arcade cartridge, and I think
A Data East arcade cartridge is huge because there's no way I'd play Bad Dudes NES over the arcade version.
Oh, it's awful. But the Data East arcade cartridge, I think, has Sly Spy on it.
Oh, thank you, Lord. Thank you. So underrated.
Here we go. What's that one going to have? Because, yeah, I saw that one and I was like, see, this is the one that I think Pat would enjoy. So it'll have Bad Dudes vs. Dragon Ninja, Breakthrough, Burger Time, Chain Reaction, Sly Spy, Lock and Chase, Darwin 4078, Dark Seal, Tumble Pop, and Wizard Fire. So, like, that's... I want that. I will not fire up the Burger Time that's on the Data East cart that's now because it's the NES version.
I wonder if they can do a Neo Geo emulator on there and do that. That'd be cool.
I don't know. I've heard that they can get up to 32-bit. I don't know what this thing can actually do.
It has save states on this, obviously. The one thing I'd like to add, Ian mentioned they might be adding it, is remapping buttons. I was playing Xevious, I believe. I was surprised that, you know, the A and B buttons, which are like the B and A NES buttons are on here, but it's at the angle going up to the right. I would love to have used the X and A buttons for my B and A. It's more comfortable on the thumbs, especially for hitting two buttons at once, and there's no like option to do turbo. So I was like, okay, you're only using 2 out of 6 buttons. Why not use the triggers for turbo? So that's the only thing. Give me a remapping and a turbo option. I'd have no complaints at all.
Sure.
That's it. I mean, it's an emulator. So in theory, you should be able to maybe potentially add that in. And that's it when it comes to, yeah. So thanks to Evercade for sending us this out. You know, maybe we'll see the CU podcast version at some point. We'll get the complete unnecessary console, handheld version. We'll do the Pat and Ian multi-cart, which would be like, I don't know, all the Mappy games, Rolling Thunder, Sly Spy. It'd be a mix-up though between all different publishers.
Yeah.
It would be costly. We probably could do just a Namco one with enough Namco games.
Most likely.
To fit on there. We do like Galaga, Mappy.
That's on Namco too. I know what you're saying.
We'll do all the ones with like Rolling Thunder. We'd get the collection, like the handful of ones we like there. All right. Thanks, Blaze. Appreciate it. They don't do many product reviews, but it's a good one out there. And by the way, it's not super expensive either. You get the premium. Let's see, the premium.
So the premium pack is the system, the Data East cartridge, the Atari 1 cartridge, and Interplay collection.
It's $100 on Amazon.
$100. So the system and 3 carts. I don't know what the standard units are on their own anymore. I think in the UK they were like £40. So it's a really reasonably priced system if you need something to pick up and play.
Sure. There you go.
And it's a proof that I can change my opinion on things.
All right, Ian, we got a Patreon poll. How do you access the Patreon?
Patreon.com/CU podcast. You go, you give money. I do writings. I do hangouts. We do the full video podcast and we do these polls.
We do. And this was a close one. This was a close one. A 55-45 split. As close as it can get. I'll give you the eyebrow raise. In second place, arcade games you could not beat as a child that others could. 45%. In first place at 55%, retro games / consoles you regretted selling. I'll start with Ian since he's probably sold a lot more than me, that he probably looks back and be like, okay, I can probably regret selling stuff like that.
So what was the question? I'm sorry, retro games that we regret
slash
selling?
Consoles.
Oh, retro games slash consoles that we regret selling.
So anything retro you regretted selling?
I do think back sometimes to some of my NES stuff, and I wish maybe I had held on to a couple of those cartridges. I don't know why. I wish I had maybe held on to Shatterhand.
Oh, that's a decent game. That's a really good game.
I like it. I don't need it, but there are some games that I maybe would have liked to have held on to. But other than that, no, my answer to this is I've actually been pretty good about what I have gotten rid of, and I sit on things for so long and hem and haw about them that...
Does it hurt?
Yes, it does. That when it does come time to selling stuff, I really don't regret it. I'm pretty good about selling my stuff off when I've made the decision to get rid of it and I stick with it. I do regret getting rid of two of the Game & Watches I used to have, though.
Oh, okay. I'll count that as a video game for this topic.
I had the Mickey Mouse Panorama Game & Watch.
Okay.
It's an extremely rare Game & Watch.
Oh, why'd you sell it then?
At the time, I needed money and it had a burnt out lamp. So one of the little segments was like it wouldn't light up anymore. Very small error.
Holy shit, it's going for a lot of money.
What is it worth now?
Well, let's see. Well, one's on eBay right now with 2 days left at $500 in the box. That's going to go for probably $1,000 at least.
Yep.
But I think a lot of these went up in price. And then let's see, completed listings. I can't find a completed listing, so it's hard to find. You're right.
But it was, I've talked about how, like, the NES games that I've kept were ones that were gifts from parents or grandparents or something like that. Stuff with sentimental value attached to it. There was some sentimental value attached to that, the Mickey Mouse one that I wish I hadn't gotten rid of. My aunt gave it to me. I got along with her great. My great aunt. She's no longer with us. And I'm kind of bummed I got rid of it. You know, I mean, at the time I needed the money, it was shortly after I moved out here. You know, in California is expensive and I was, you know, kind of getting my footing and I sold it for, I think even with the problem, I was able to sell it for like $250. And it's like in the grand scheme of things, how long does $250 last in California? You know, I got rid of something that I genuinely liked for not a lot of money. And I'm sure I needed it for rent or something, but I don't know. As time goes on, that is a sale that I genuinely regret making. I wish I still had that. And even if I got a brand new one, it's still not the one that I got, you know, when I was a kid. It's not like I'm trying to get another one of these Mickey Panoramas. It's not going to replace the one that I got rid of. So yeah, I think that's probably the big one that I regret getting rid of.
I didn't regret it at the time. Obviously, it's like, well, they're NES games. You can get them back. When I sold all my NES stuff when I was probably, I want to say by the time I was 13, I was done with the NES. 12. You had Super Nintendo. You had computer games with CD-ROM technology. Why are you playing the NES still at that point? Basically, that's what I thought. So I sold, I believe there was a yard sale with my grandma. Also where I sold almost all my G.I. Joes. And that I regret, even though I probably have most of them rebought nowadays. That was bad, looking back. Because I treated my G.I. Joes with respect. I kept all the weapons. I never lost the weapons. I kept...
Really?
Even when I sold them, I put them
all... That's impressive.
Yeah. And I had like... out of all the toys I had, I had the most G.I. Joes because they were cheaper. I had like 40 G.I. Joes I had. 40 to 50. I had G.I. Joes. Maybe not 50. Yeah, 30 to 40 I had. And... I even wrapped up all the weapons with them nice and gave them to a good home. Like, here's the weapons with them, you know. So, but I remember selling my NES games, I believe, in console there. I think I sold the console probably like 93, 92 is when I sold the console. I got a yard sale. The games, I think some went with that and some went to Funko Land, I believe, or that UVT, which was the local, more local-ish store that I told you would either say, no, we want this or no, we don't. They wouldn't just give you a cent. They say, no, we don't want this, you know. And that's where I bought, and that's where I traded in, I think, even my Turbo games there. And I think I might have bought a used Turbo game there. I forget. So I regretted that, but not to a huge extent until I started collecting in college. But then at that point, it was so cheap to buy NES stuff in college. It didn't matter that much. So that wasn't a huge regret. The biggest regret I have, though, is something that would be worth nowadays probably $3,000 to $4,000 that my cousin got from their neighbor, and the cousin gave to me to not necessarily sell, but they didn't want it. It wasn't worth a huge amount at the time we know of. That was the Imagination Machine, which was a computer module add-on for the APF MP1000 console, which no one had.
Mm-hmm.
The MP1000. No one has it. No one covers it. No one knows about it. You know what I mean? It was a small, gaudy color console with bad controllers. You know, yes. Keypad and bad joysticks. I have it in the box, of course, but not a lot of people do. I got mine in the box at a Goodwill shop, Goodwill auction, like 10, 12 years ago. Got it for like $40. It probably is worth several hundred in the box. But the Imagination Machine is interesting because you have a computer module made for a console that no one had. And APF was a big company. They put out so many Pong clubs in the 70s.
They didn't do like anything after that, but
I mean, they probably petered out with the Game Crash. But yeah, they're they're a decent sized company with like Coleco, you know, and Magnavox putting those out. So I had the Imagination Machine via my cousin. It had like the original shipping box. It wasn't like an actual, but it was like a shipping box that it came in. It had the printer. I don't know if there was an APF read a printer, but there was a printer. It had all like the basic cartridge in the box. It had the bigger folder stuff for like, here's like the spelling program. Here's the word processor program. I mean, it had like this person that got this, Ian, bought everything with it. They got everything.
Right.
There was an older couple at the time. They're probably like 60 or 70. They're probably like 40 when they got it. This was like 2004 when I had it, or 2003. So it had the printer, it had the shipping box, it had all the instructions, it had everything. And then, so I said, I'll put up an auction and I was going to give my cousin a cut, even though I wasn't required. He said he got it from me. I'll give him a cut of it. So it ended up going to, I think, some computer museum. I believe I shipped it to Germany or somewhere in Europe. I did not realize how much interest would be in this. I knew that it was obviously a rare thing, but that's a stupid computer module. For the MP1000. It's like, who cares about this? And it ended up going there. I think it sold for tons of bids. It didn't go for a huge amount looking back. I think it was maybe $600 or $700, which surprised me at the time. Like, that's surprising. But now...
It's got to be a shitload more now.
Well, the last one on eBay, which I put here, the last one, because these things come up only like once a year, twice. One went just the console itself. Excuse me, the computer with the console, which kind of built in, and a basic cartridge, just that, and the adapter. Oh, and it's right, the tape player is built into it. Just that, it went for $1,220. Just the bare computer. And I just told you, I had everything. I had all the software. I still have software laying around. I have four in the box game cards. They don't go for a lot. Like, I mean, I had the actual tape software, and that stuff you can't find. So if that thing nowadays, if this went for $1,200, what I had, so it was probably worth $3,000-$4,000. And it's not just the money part. It's something that's so incredibly rare that even by, I say, 2 to 3 years later, as I got more and more into game collecting in general versus just NES, looking at it, you know, 2 years later, I was like, I should have kept that thing. I'm never going to see that again. I've never seen an imagination.
That's not something that's replaceable. It's not coming back.
I don't think I've seen an imagination machine at any game convention I've ever gone to.
No, I don't think I have.
I don't think I have. Even going to Portland, when they have people that have old computers, I never seen it. I think I might have seen Estimate at one point. They might have not made over $1,000 or $2,000 of these things. Like, they just, what's the market for this? They didn't sell that many of the consoles, you know, and you kind of need the, you know, actually, you don't need the console to use the computer part, but it's a part of it. It's an add-on for it. So, yeah, it's just a weird thing. And that's my biggest regret, because like, I'd be stupid to sell something that rare, even if it's not. And plus, it wasn't worth that much money in order to sell. I was like, I'll sell it and see what happens. I don't really need it. Plus, because it was bulky, like the big, with the shipping box, it was like a big fucking thing.
They're big, right? Yeah.
Well, it's not super big, but with the box and everything else. And I think I said it had the printer, I believe. I believe it was a printer. I'm going to look that up. Imagination Machine printer. It could not have been a printer they made by themselves. But it was something that was like the all-in-one solution. Maybe I'm confused. Maybe it was another printer that was with it. But yeah, look it up. Imagination Machine, and how weird it is, and how, you know, they probably didn't make a huge amount of them. And yeah, that's my biggest regret. It's like I'm almost ashamed to admit it, that it would be like me finding, you know, not monetary wise, but almost as rare. You'd find like, you know, you find like a fucking Steam event and be like, oh, I'll just put it on eBay and get the money for it. Even it's like, you're never going to find it again. Like, right. You might as well just keep it.
Mm-hmm.
The money isn't worth it. Never, at least to me, never finding it again. Maybe Steam events. Actually, at the time, yeah, Steam events at the time was probably only worth about $1,000 when I had this. So that's probably a good comparison had I known. Like, it's not, wouldn't it be worth selling? But I did, you know, second regret. I had a Game Boy prototype I found on a flea market and I sold it for only like $150.
What was it a prototype of?
Oh, God. I believe it was an existing game because if it wasn't, I'd be stupid to admit. I believe it was a skateboarding game.
Oh, I think I remember this. I think it was. I think you told me it was like Tour de Thrash or something like that, or I don't know.
But that was, again, early 2000s. I found it on a flea market, and then I believe I posted it on digital press, and someone bought it for me off digital press. I didn't get ripped off. I mean, even nowadays, you know, a third-party Game Boy prototype probably would only go for a few hundred dollars, I guess, 200. So, like, I think I got, like, 100 or 150 for it. I was like, okay, yeah, I don't need it. I don't want it. But now, looking back, I sort of evolved in a bad way, as Ian would think. I started hoarding more of the stuff I found instead of just like, okay, I really don't need this.
Sure.
I mean, I'll keep it for a few months. So no, I started keeping everything, which is good because now the stuff's worth money. It's a good thing I didn't sell it off. Yeah.
You've held it through a couple
ups,
ups
and
downs. Yeah.
A couple of semi-crashes and the last one. And then we had the pandemic boosted up. I'm like, okay. You know what crashed though? Bitcoin crashed and Dogecoin crashed. Ian. Glad you got out of Dogecoin.
I made money on it, but I have 1,000 coins just sitting there. I'll just check back on them in 4 years when nostalgia makes it go up to 50 cents.
Will there be a nostalgia for crypto?
We'll see.
You have 1,000 coins?
I have 1,200. I bought at an extraordinarily low price.
Why don't you tell your good buddy Pat to get it on it? You didn't. No one tells me to get it on.
Because I bought my Doge and my AMC when I was drunk one night in December.
Oh,
it was a lark.
Oh, okay. So that's my main regret, those two, that prototype. And God, I really hope, maybe I'm not massaging the story, I really hope it wasn't a game that came out. If I sold a prototype Game Boy game that was not dumped, I'll never forgive myself, but it was like 2002, 2003. It was that long ago. Because I was still living at home. Still, that's how far long ago it was. So there you go. There you have it. I have lots of things I regret, you know, other people around me throwing out, but that's a whole other conversation. That's a therapy session.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make me throw out my NES game boxes. Yep. I kept them nice and stacked in the attic. Then they were eventually tossed anyway. I had the collector mentality even when I was 8 years old. I always kept the manuals back then, but stacked the manual. The manuals were stacked up. They're all kept nice.
We always kept the manuals in a drawer on the coffee table. And okay. There would be days where I wouldn't want to play Nintendo, but I would sit there and just go through the manuals. I loved going through
manuals.
They
were entertaining.
As a kid.
There's
loved
some
all
nice
the
stories.
Art and shit like
the
that.
Art was, the line art was great. All right. Ian, we have a traditional Q&A on the CU Pod. We haven't done one of the official Q&A in months.
We do have a traditional Q&A.
This is from Brandon Velasquez. What post-childhood games / game systems were you most excited for? I guess we'll say legal age of 18. When you're a man, what were you most excited for? 18 plus. Unless you want to say like post-college, like where you're like out of college or whatever.
In terms of systems, probably the Switch. I got real hyped on the Switch.
Really?
Yeah, I got real hyped. I was excited for the Switch to come out. I wanted to see what it would do and what it would look like. And I knew it would be a while until I got one, but Vani had hers pre-ordered. That was when I was like sick. So I was like, I can't like go out and buy this. I need to set aside this money until I find out what the fuck's going on with my stomach.
That was fall 2016.
So I was really excited about that. I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty freaking excited about the Analog Pocket.
Well, okay. Before that, walk me through when you first saw that first, you know, that Switch trailer where all the people on the rooftops playing the games and like that got you hyped. Like, you were like, woo!
I thought the idea of a portable that could go to a console was a very good idea, very exciting.
Where's that first trailer?
And it appealed to me because, you know, Vani and I live in a smallish apartment. We share a TV. I was...
October 20th, 2016.
It was cool to me to be able to be playing something. You know, she gets home from work. She wants to unwind. She wants to play something. I can pull it out of the... you know, the dock and use it. So yes, I was excited about that. Dreamcast would have been when I was 17, so I can't really say that, but I was super hyped to get the Dreamcast. Just very, very excited about that. But the Analog Pocket is one that I find myself like counting down the days now at this point until I can get it. It's not a brand new system, but it's a system, so we can count it. I mean, I've got a whole stack of games set aside that are going to be like the first games that I want to run through the system when it comes in. So I think probably that is in terms of current. That's what I'm looking forward to. The PlayStation 5 and the X, like the PlayStation 5 just seems like something that I'm going to have to buy at some point in
You're
time.
You're going to have to, you think?
Seems like a chore. I'm not particularly excited about it, but I know that there's going to be some games on it that I'm going to want to play at some point. And I'm already in the stupid PlayStation ecosystem and have a bunch of games that would transfer over to it. And I don't want to lose those. So, you know, that's something that I'll get eventually, but that just seems like keeping up to keep up, you know, because it's my job to stay on top of video games.
In theory, it's mine as well.
Yes, it is.
In theory. I was fairly excited for the Switch. Not much of like gung-ho, I must get it. I've gotten every new Nintendo console since, well, not every one. So I've only gotten, I skipped GameCube 64. So no, I haven't gotten every new one. I went new. But I got the Wii. I bought a Wii one barely used back when you couldn't get them, remember? Like for like 2 years, you couldn't get a Wii. And I got one, it was like 2007. I got one like January or February, like 5 months after it came out or whatever it was, 4 months, and with a bunch of used games. So I got that. That was kind of excited for the Wii. Now I think about it, yeah, I was excited for the Wii. The motion control thing actually kind of got
me. Sure.
I remember going on eBay every day looking for one, like trying to find like a deal. I wasn't going to spend, what was that, $300 when that came out? Wii, it was like $300?
I thought it was $250.
Wii retail price. The Wii was $250.
Yeah.
So like you couldn't find one new for under like $350, or like it was tough. It was getting scalped left and right. So I went on eBay and I found it had like four games with it, and it had extra Wii modes. It was like someone that probably had it and got rid of it after like 4 months, 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's still fairly new. I got the package for like $340. I remember the retail price all with the four games was probably like over $400. So I got a decent deal. So I was excited. Like I remember turning on the Wii. To me, that was like my first. I had abandoned consoles basically up to that point for the past 12 years. I'm trying to think. Like I really stopped playing Super Nintendo about 94. So obviously I was still playing retro stuff, NES, but I abandoned new console games for like a decade. Now that I think about it, I wasn't playing any
sure.
of them. It was just computer. So the more I think about it, the Wii kind of got me back into console games more than I thought. It was like, I remember playing the bowling the first time like everyone did and playing like the batting, I remember getting a kick out of the baseball game. I'm like, oh, this is cool. And it was weird to go from like, okay, you're used to Super Nintendo. And yeah, I played console Nintendo games with my cousins and friends. I played N64 in college. Yes, I get it. But I totally didn't play GameCube at all. I mean, at all. GameCube was not a thing for me at all. So I went straight from really some N64 a little bit to the Wii. And it was weird seeing like Nintendo was like growing up almost. It's like, oh, you have a splash screen and it's all like cutting edge and you have a shop. And it was really a weird thing to see that. It was almost like it matured with me almost in a way.
Sure.
I was 26 when the Wii came out. Hadn't played a game, you know, newer owner since I was a preteen to early teenager. And it was like Nintendo grew up with me and it was almost like a retro feeling, even though it wasn't a retro console. So super excited about the Switch. The more and more I think about it, I loved Wii Play. As stupid as Wii Play was, a really good set of collection of mini games that really used the.
I've never played Wii.
You've never played Wii Play?
Mm-mm. I know people like it, but I've never played it.
Came with an extra Wiimote.
Yeah, that's what sold it for most people.
It was brilliant. The pool game, the little combat type of game, basically Duck Hunt was on that.
People said the pool game was surprisingly good.
Yeah. There's a lot of cool games on that were fun to play multiplayer. I might have played Strip Wii Play once, whatever. But it was a fun experience. So that was a big one for me. Then for some reason, I go back to it. People say that was the last new game you played. It wasn't the last new game I played, but I was for some reason over the moon over L.A. Not L.A. Confidential. The fucking L.A. Noir. It's L.A. Confidential, the game. But L.A. Noir. I was over the moon over thinking, wow, this interactive interrogation thing is pretty damn cool, how they're going to pull it off, even though it's basically a choose-your-own-adventure thing. There's not a huge amount of interaction with it. It's still, you know, hit A or B or C to get to this point. It was interesting. It was an interesting, another game that style that, you know, Rockstar abandoned L.A. Noire. So how many things that they did that they never went back to, you know, out of all this stuff that they published, you know?
Yeah.
It's amazing when you think about it. Like, they did so much more experimentation that they don't do anymore at all. Even with bad stuff that they experimented with, that, you know, like that one you're beating up people at the mall. State of emergency. Never went back to that after a couple of games. They never went back to that. You know, they didn't do stuff like that anymore. But yeah, those are the ones to me that I would say most excited for in my adulthood. Wii more than I thought. Maybe also because with the Wii, I had just moved out the year before. So it was like there was something tied to that. I had my own apartment.
Sure.
I had my.
That's how I feel about the GameCube. I bought the GameCube. Oh. The GameCube came out right after I moved out, and like,
okay,
I attached the GameCube to my first apartment. Like that, yeah. It's memories of that.
I had my God. I don't want to tell you how much I spent for my 37-inch Olivia LCD TV that ended up remember dying after I brought it here after a year. Mm-hmm. Or, no, it lasted like 2-3 years. That cost me $1,100 for a 37-inch LCD, and that was a deal. Because Olivia, it's probably a better known brand now than it was in 2000 and when I bought the TV, 2006. I moved out that summer, 2006. I moved out. $1,150, I think I spent on that 37-inch. Now a 37-inch TV is like, I don't know, $200, $250, whatever it is. That's what I played the Wii on, and it was a fun time. It was absolutely fun. So that's it. Yeah, Wii and LA Noir, those are my two go-tos there.
Yeah. All right.
All right, we got some voicemails, Ian.
Let's do it.
How do you access the voicemails?
Don't know.
You go to Anchor.
That's your pitch.
That's my pitch. Anchor.fm/ACU podcast. You can leave us a message. You know, hey, you know, my name is Floyd from Nantucket, and give me your thoughts about
Floyd
our kicker.
From Nantucket.
I don't know. I thought of Uncle Floyd, but Uncle Floyd's from New Jersey. You ever have Uncle Floyd on TV?
Mm-mm.
He was the guy on Turkey television, Nickelodeon. Uncle Floyd, he also had a local Northern Jersey.
Yeah, I don't remember him.
You don't remember that? Okay.
Hey, this is Gage from New Mexico. A quick question for y'all. During y'all's prime collecting phase in life, did y'all do a lot of garage sale / yard sale hopping? If so, did y'all ever find anything worthwhile? Thanks.
Yeah. For game stuff, not a huge amount, but some toy stuff. I have a little, Muscle Men came in like a little 3 or 4 pack. I have one of those in the package I found at a yard sale in like probably 2005. That out of all the things I ever found at the time, well, I wasn't worth that much. Now it's probably worth like 60, 70 bucks. At the time though, I was like, that's amazing to find stuff. Yard sales still invigorate me more than any other thing when it comes to hunting for stuff, because it's a total unknown what someone's going to have. They can have gold, they might even know it, not even care, and give you a good deal too. That's between sure. that in a flea market. At a flea market, people take all that time, usually, not always, to get up, pack their stuff at 5 a.m., go and set up. They want to get a return. At a yard sale, a lot of times people don't care as much. They're like, I just want to get rid of it. Get some money.
And the later in the day, the more they want to finish up inside. So I never really did any yards. I have to be honest, I never really found anything at yard sales. Almost all my game collecting was done at various flea markets, but not even just the ones that were regular, like say the Super Flea in Buffalo or Kobe's. Little one-off flea markets that like a church would put on for a weekend or something like that.
Oh, the church ones are great.
I love the church ones were fantastic.
I found a GBA micro at a church one back in Jersey. Forgot about that in the box. I believe
I used to pick up a lot of board games at church flea markets too.
Yeah, that might be where I found my Famicom GBA at a church. It was a vendor, but it was at a church flea market in Jersey. Flea markets are exciting, especially because a lot of times, you know, okay, there's the great ones that we used to have near us before COVID, where it's like, oh, this is the weekend every year where the neighborhood does it, and you get like 20 or 12 people from the condo, you know what I mean, they all do it. Like, those are great. You can spend like an hour going through 20 people's stuff. It's fantastic. And you can find whatever you you don't even know what you're going to find. But the surprise of being, this is more in Jersey than San Diego. For some reason, more in Jersey. The surprise of just driving randomly on a Saturday or Sunday and seeing the sign, like, what? It's like it's like a gold rush.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, now you got to follow the 7 signs. It's like an adventure to get to it. There's something about that. I can't explain it. Can't explain what it is about randomly. It must be the dopamine thing, like of gambling. I don't know. But you see the sign, follow the arrow. It's like magenta paper, lime green, you know, like neon paper. Follow the arrows to it. And you get there, and there could be something good or something bad. But I have the best memories of just feeling like that's like a good time even if you don't really necessarily find anything, getting out of the car, hey, what's going on? Oh, what do you got here? And you look around and you see what they have. Sometimes you ask if they had more stuff in their house. Sometimes they did, sometimes they're not. But no, that was the most fun I ever had, probably. Way more than flea markets, I even say. Because flea markets is a lot of, it's a lot of searching, not a lot of finding on a flea market. At least at a yard sale, you're not searching for hours. It's like, oh, 5-10 minutes, I leave. And that's it.
That's the longest I think we've spent on a, it's a good one. It's a good one.
That could have been its own topic.
Could have been.
It was wasted there. It's wasted.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Gizmo from California, and I want to ask, what with eBay banning the sale of adult video games, do you see this as a danger or at least a concern when it comes to preserving adult and pornographic video games?
You think that's going to be an issue?
No. I mean, it's going to make them slightly harder to get, but people will find other avenues.
Yeah, sure. There's other modes out there to get this stuff. What's the next one?
Hi, guys. Love the podcast. It's Dave all the way over from England. And I was just wondering what your favorite fighting game of all time is. Mine is Mortal Kombat 11. I do really like the mechanics in that. I think it's one of the most balanced.
All right, I'm going to raise that in post. Wow, that's very soft-spoken, Dave. Favorite fighting game of all time, he said his was Mortal Kombat 11.
It's tough. I really, really got into Guilty Gear Xrd. Never got good at it, but I really like that game. That was the Guilty Gear entry that ran for, I think, 3 releases on the, it was during the PlayStation 4, Xbox One era, last generation. But as far as old school fighters go, I love Mark of the Wolves. God, I love Mark of the Wolves. Garou Mark of the Wolves is one of my favorites. It's all SNK fighters. Garou Mark of the Wolves, King of Fighters 98 or 2002 UM, and Samurai Showdown 2, specifically 2. I love Samurai Showdown 2. If you made me pick outside of that, because I do like Street Fighter games, it's just I really love the SNK fighters. I love Street Fighter Alpha 2. That's probably my favorite of the Street Fighters.
Give me like Tekken 2 or 3 or Tekken Tag. Like those games to me are not just great because all different characters. They're probably to me the most intuitive fighting games out there because you're literally using limbs to fight, and you can kind of combo and have it make sense based upon you can pick up and play a lot of the fighters and learn just by experimenting. And I like that. Tekken. I'm pretty good at. I like Tekken a lot.
Hey, gentlemen, this is Matt again from Long Island. Hope you're both doing well. My question's for Pat. When you're at conventions and whatnot, do you often get people asking you to sign game cartridges like you featured on Pat the NES Punk? And if so, what is the most commonly requested cartridge that you get to get signed? Love the podcast, you guys. As always, stay safe.
There's probably not one that's most commonly requested. It's probably whatever someone finds for cheap laying around. But I have signed Danny Sullivan's, and I think Ian has as well. But yep. I've signed Track and Field. I've signed Amagon's. I've signed the guy, I can't remember the videos I did, Commando. Yeah, I've signed whatever. It's usually whatever people have around. But it's also obviously not once I've done videos. Super Mario Duck Hunt, I probably signed the most out of everything. It was the most common game.
Hey, this is Nick from Tokyo. And my question today is, why did you decide to go with the one-up sound when you mentioned limited versus the limited thing you used to do, Pat? So, yeah, I feel like we lost something precious there.
Don West,
yes,
limited. No, and by the way, shout out to Don West. He's going through some health things right now. He made public health issues.
Hopefully
he gets better. Yeah, I think he has. I think he has a lymphoma thing going on.
Don,
good old Don West, selling me baseball cards into my teens and twenties. There, I don't know why. I had the little mushroom that Yoshi gave to me that made sound. And one time I just said, limited, and hit it. And it was literally just that. It became a thing. It was on the desk back in, that was probably 2014 or 15, whenever that was, back in Condo Country. Condo Country. Back then. In our cramped little space that I would freak out every week and yell about it. It's fucking everything. It's so small. I'm like knocking into everything. Ian has to deal with me going crazy there. Okay, next one. Limited. Let's see.
Ian, Pat, fellow Patrick and resident of Earth here. I just finished this week's podcast, and you all discussed eBay's new policy regarding adult games. I don't agree with it, but it's their platform, so whatever. What I'm curious about, though, is why they don't do anything about the abundance of counterfeit games on there.
Because they make money.
Some money.
Makes some money. They get a cut of every single thing sold on eBay listed.
Because they have no ethics.
They have no incentive to lock to – it would have to be Nintendo or a bunch of IP holders basically saying, to cut this shit out. That's what it would take. And for Nintendo, it's probably like, well, we don't care if someone's making, you know, repros of some of these games, whatever. It's not worth their time. Nintendo can't even keep up making their own money, counting their own money. Unfortunately, that's what it comes down to. Well.
Hey, guys. This is Dan from Turnersville, New Jersey. With the Castlevania series coming back on Netflix, I was just wondering, what would you like to see for the future of the Castlevania series? Would you like to see them go back to the 2D games? Would you like to see a Metroidvania thing, maybe an open world thing? And if so, who do you think would be the right studio to develop that game? Thanks.
I don't know about studio, Way Forward and and Igarashi did a great job, I thought, with Bloodstained: Curse of the Moon. So obviously it would be awesome if they could actually get the Castlevania license. I thought you were talking about the anime. I don't want any more seasons of the anime. I thought seasons 3 and 4 were super uneven.
Is that done? Are they still making
it? It's done. Supposedly season 4 was done.
I watched the first season. I thought it was pretty good.
Seasons were great. Season 3 was real uneven, and season 4 was uneven. It had some good stuff, but not. I'm ready for it to just go away. I would love to see Castlevania stay 2D, though. I really have no interest in 3D Castlevania.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. I know you guys were at one point fans of pro wrestling. I know you don't watch that much anymore or at all.
I'm still a fan
in the case of Ian. But I was wondering if you guys had been to any live wrestling events and what may have been your favorite experiences doing so. Also, Ian, I think you should watch AEW. It's really good. Just give it a shot.
So I went to a lot of events in the early to mid-20s because that's when I was, you know, really big on it from the Attitude Era. But once early mid-20s, going with college friends, and I had MSG, Madison Square Garden, and the Meadowlands right there, so we got major events. I was at the, you know, I've seen every major pay-per-view in person, the Big Five, King of the Ring, WrestleMania, Survivor Series, SummerSlam. The only one I have not seen live was Royal Rumble, which would be the most fun one. I would love to have seen Royal Rumble. Wait a minute, did I see Royal Rumble live? I might have. No, I can't remember. But we would go to like 3 or 4 events a year. We went to like, we would never see a regular house show. We're like, no, we'll go to like a Raw or a SmackDown. I don't think we ever went to a SmackDown. We went to Raws. But one of the biggest ones, I believe, was that the King of the Ring where Angle tried to throw Shane through the glass and then the glass didn't break and he hit his head. Was that at Madison Square Garden? Might have been. I can't remember. I can't remember if I saw that in person or not. But I saw like, you know, it was like right after WrestleMania with, you know, pre-invasion where Booker T showed up, the crowd went nuts, and then, you know, DDP showed up and took off his mask and things like that. But the biggest one, unfortunately, looking back, was WrestleMania 20 when Chris Benoit won the title. That was awesome to see live, you know, before things went downhill with him. That was great to see in person. That, like, the crowd went absolutely ballistic. Like, that match was so hot the whole time in terms of, like, geez. It was nuts. No, and plus, no one thought like they're going to actually put the title on Benoit. Like, no one thought it would actually happen.
So I've been to a lot of wrestling shows, pay per views, Thunders, Nitros.
You've been to Thunders?
I've been to Thunders. I've been to SmackDowns. I've been to Nitros. I've been to Raws. I've been to multiple WCW pay per views. I think I was at, I can't remember, including the Halloween Havoc where Jim Duggan turned heel by going Canadian.
Oh, God. That was like the bad WCW era. It was like 99.
But it was cool because I got to see Muta. I got to see Great Muta.
Oh, nice.
That pay per view. I can't remember which WWF pay per view I went to. I've also been to pro wrestling guerrilla shows. I've been to a few Ring of Honor shows. There was a time where I was going to.
Ring Rat over here.
Yeah, it was a good time.
I didn't have a chance to see WCW because New Jersey and New York City were strongholds for WWE. They didn't really have events. Pennsylvania, they did. And obviously, if you went to upstate New York, but I think I had a chance in college just to see one. I just didn't go. I think it was a Nitro. I probably should have went. I never seen a WCW event live. That would have been nice to see how bad it paled in comparison to WWE. You know,
most of the WCW events I went to were when it was like real fucking hot, and sure, they were fun. I really enjoyed them. Yeah,
you got to see DDP live before WWE ruined him and made him like a weird stalker. Damn you, WWE! God, ruined. How do you? They were punishing those WCW guys. They really.
Oh yeah.
Can you imagine DDP, like the People's Champion fight, Rock versus DDP? How fucking huge that would have been.
Would have been amazing.
Would have been amazing. Would have been amazing in 2001 to do that. And, you know, DDP was a little over the hill, but he could still go, and The Rock was in his prime. Well, okay, sorry. Now I'm getting... This is why I like thinking about wrestling, because I get pissed. I get pissed thinking about wrestling and how bad they do things versus anything else.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Leo from Los Angeles, and I have a question just for Pat. What is the origin of your beef with Wario at the swap meet? Did he stiff you on a deal, or is he just a bad seller? What is it? Thank.
Okay, so the beef with, we affectionately named Wario since he looks like Wario, is the main video game reseller at the local flea market swap meet, and never had a good experience with him almost ever from the get-go. The first time I came to San Diego, when I hit on Ian basically and talked to him in 2008, that summer, I also went to the flea market. And at that flea market, I found, to this day, it's still shocking that I found the Virtual Boy in the rental case set up that I almost didn't notice. It was blatantly in my face. And I like peered over it, because in New Jersey, you didn't find stuff like that. Coming to San Diego, it was a whole new world, and my collection increased.
Exploded?
Exponentially, almost. At least geometrically, once I got to... I would tell Ian what I find every weekend. He didn't want to hear. I would tell him all the shit I find every fucking weekend. Like garbage bags of stuff sometimes. Not just games, but toy stuff. So that first time, you know, Wario was there selling. He was probably the only... No, there was another reseller. Maybe a third small one, but... He had this binder. He must have just gotten into it. He had a binder. I don't know where this came from. He was pricing everything he had based upon this binder, this weird binder, and going through everything, and it was print out in a binder. To this day, I don't know if there was like a thing you pay for online in order to get the information back in the mid-2000s. And he was busy. There was a lot of people at his stand. A lot of them were younger than me. When I was 28. There was like probably early 20s, some teenagers. Oh, this retro. Retro was getting hot now. We're at the time where retro was starting to get hot in 2008. And he was dealing with people. And I brought a few games. I had like, at that point, I was still missing, let's see, 2008. I had 500 games or so, 550, something like that. So I still had 40% of the library to go, 35%, bad math. And I remember picking up the Metroid reprint, the label, the classic series, you know, the yellow label, Metroid. And asking him, and he looked in his book, and it was like super pricey. I was like, this is before we have smartphones. I couldn't even check eBay at the time. But I remember just being taken aback, and like it was just bad customer service at the time. Just super rude. It was almost like, well, I get other customers, so screw you. It wasn't friendly at all. So I got off on a bad foot with him. I didn't realize I'd see him like every week
right
after that. You know, he probably didn't realize that he must know who I was after running into me and like running around early in the morning looking for the same shit. But then I started hearing stories about him from other sellers that had been there a long time. He almost got, he threatened, not allegedly, someone told me this, but I'm not saying it ever happened, that he threatened to knife someone over an argument over something, another seller. God. No one had anything nice to say about this person. No one did. Sellers didn't, that were regulars. Other customers had nothing nice to say about him. Then I started hearing from other ones that he allegedly would rip off other sellers early in the morning by doing a classic thing where he would ask, you know, he would put like a game on top of another game and saying, how much for this? And the person would say, okay, that's $5. Okay, here's the money. And he would take both of the games.
Oh, yeah. I remember you telling me about that.
And I saw him, I think I saw him attempt that once, something similar to that. And I've seen him get into minor altercations with sellers here and there. And there's just a general distrust of this person. And I could see why. It's someone that got into it with no knowledge of it, probably thought this is hot, I can get into it, and just bad customer service, and just, yeah, that's all. That's all. Never got into an argument with him in person, really. or anything. Never had a huge problem with in person. It's like, you know, go along to get along sort of thing. But that's all. That's why. All right, we got one more here.
Hey, this is E3 presenter extraordinaire Tommy Tallarico. Okay, you guys can stop pretending that when I spilled those dice onto that screen with that controller, that your jaw was not on the floor. That was bogus coverage by you guys. You want the real coverage? You need to get it from all those YouTubers that I retweet every day. Like my man Snail Snot 420. He tells it like it is, man. Especially when I give him stuff. And he's got a new video in the works about how the Pfizer vaccine changes your brain so that you think the Amico's not awesome.
Oh.
But I even had a crowd there. Nobody else did, just me. You know how the WWF has the Thunderdome with all the fans in the stands watching from home? I had that too. And this is how they reacted.
Oh. That's
and
how they
I
were.
I assure you that is not Lumen Field after Seattle beat Green Bay in the 2015 NFC Championship. So don't even say that.
Okay, very specific crowd noise that Tommy was using there. That okay. Thanks, Tommy. I wasn't aware that the Pfizer vaccine. That's why we were down on the Amico. I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Pfizer gang on that. All right. God. Is that it?
That's
for the
it.
See you podcast.
We done.
We done. We done. Again, thanks. Thanks to everyone out there for following along. Check out Video Game Years. Get a chance. DVDs. The new DVDs available at ultimatenintendo.com. And check me out on Twitch Wednesday night. Oh, I got poker tomorrow night too. I'll rope you to a game one time.
Doubtful.
I'll cover your buy-in.
I like.
I'll
the
cover
game.
Your buy-in. I want to see you in action.
It's been a long time.
It's been a while. All right, that's it. We'll see you. We'll see you next week.